appeared to be no good reason via videos and news clips that brought the controversy to a head. Although Mr. Kaepernick led his San Francisco 49ers to the Super Bowl in 2013, his skills had been severely challenged in recent years. Many, however, believed he was being ostracized by the NFL because of his politics. Mr. Trump was asked today about whether Kaepernick deserves another shot at playing in the National Football League.
So I'd like to see it. Frankly, I'd love to see Kaepernick come in if he's good enough. But I don't want to see him come in because somebody thinks it's a good PR move. If he's good enough, he will be in.
I'm Joe Palca, VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The crisis has a devastating and disproportionate effect on Malian children. Children are being forcibly recruited by armed groups, kidnapped and killed.
That's UNHCR spokesman on the impact of Mali's worsening crisis on children. Details coming up also. As the deadline approaches, a crowded field of about 70 candidates are competing to be president of Tunisia. And a new Human Rights Watch report accuses Eritrea of forced labor and physical abuse. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Cameroon has instructed its military to be on the alert as Equatorial Guinea insists it is building a border wall to keep Cameroonians and West Africans from illegally entering its territory. Equatorial Guinea's announcement comes as officials of the Central African Economic and Monetary Community's regional economic bloc, of which Equatorial Guinea is a member, are encouraging the free movement of people and goods to boost economic growth in the region. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
32-year-old Cameroonian merchant Kommy Pascal is just returning to the Cameroonian capital Yaoundé from Equatorial Guinea with truckloads of wine he is importing. He also exports cement, roofing sheets and farm produce from Cameroon to the neighboring nation. Kommy says throughout his journey, discussions focused on the wall Equatorial Guinea says it is building on its border with Cameroon.
I feel very bad because goods will not come again to Cameroon, and farmers who sell in Equatorial Guinea, what do they expect them to do with their goods? Creating that particular wall is not going to permit Cameroonians to sell their goods.
When Equatorial Guinea said it was building the wall and erected milestones on the border near the Cameroon town of Kiosi, Cameroon Army Chief Lieutenant General René Claude Meka visited the border and said he had been informed that the neighboring state was not respecting territorial limits and was encroaching into Cameroon territory. He said the Cameroonian army would not tolerate any unlawful intrusion. Anastasio Asumu Monos, Equatorial Guinea ambassador to Cameroon, was called up by Cameroon's Minister of External Relations on Thursday to explain his country's plans for the border. Ambassador Monos says his country is about to construct a border wall, but that information that the Equatorial Guinea military had encroached and installed milestones in Cameroon's territory is misleading. Equatorial Guinea has always accused Cameroon of letting its citizens and West Africans enter its territory illegally. More than 100 migrants from Togo, Burkina Faso, Nigeria and Benin on their way to Equatorial Guinea and Gabon are currently stranded in Cameroon after they were rescued by the Central African States military from their capsizing vessel in the Atlantic Ocean. Cameroonian-born Christian Bock, visiting lecturer of international relations at the National University of Equatorial Guinea, says the wall will stop illegal migrants and secure Equatorial Guinea.
There was a problem in Equatorial Guinea because there was a coup there. Then the government had to protect itself and say that the government was suspending implementation of the agreement. It's a really complex situation.
Equatorial Guinea has quite often sealed its border with Cameroon, complaining of insecurity as a result of illegal immigration. In December 2017, Equatorial Guinea said it had arrested 30 foreign armed men from Chad, the Central African Republic and Sudan on the border in possession of rocket launchers, rifles and a stockpile of ammunition to destabilize the government of President Teodoro Obiang, who has led oil-rich Equatorial Guinea since 1979. Cameroon said it also arrested 40 heavily armed men on the 290-kilometer boundary. Both countries are members of the Central African Economic and Monetary Community, which in 2017 said it had reached a milestone after heads of state meeting in Chad lifted visa requirements for their 45 million citizens traveling within the six-member nation economic bloc. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The UN Refugee Agency is urging countries to provide international protection and asylum to people fleeing the increasingly chaotic conditions in Mali. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
Mali's 2015 peace and reconciliation agreement has all but collapsed, as several rebel groups affiliated with a loose coalition of militias have failed to respect its provisions. The UN Refugee Agency says the armed factions and Islamist extremist groups operating in the country have been escalating the fighting. The agency reports the conflict, which had been mainly waged in northern Mali, now has spread to the central Mopti region and some parts of the southern region. It says government authorities and institutions are largely powerless to stop the increasing turmoil. UNHCR spokesman Andre Mahetich says civilians, politicians, civil servants, and security forces are being targeted and killed. He says local populations, particularly in central regions, report widespread human rights violations, including summary executions, disappearances, torture, and arbitrary arrests.
The crisis has a devastating and disproportionate effect on Malian children. Children are being forcibly recruited by armed groups, kidnapped and killed. More than 285,000 children are being denied education due to school closures.
The UNHCR has issued new protection guidelines in light of the deteriorating humanitarian and security situation in Mali. Mahetich tells VOA the guidelines are meant for anyone involved in adjudicating asylum claims from Malian nationals. He says they stress people fleeing violence in Mali should be given protection.
Nobody from these conflict-affected areas should be forcibly returned to Mali, and also that the remaining parts of the country should not be considered as an appropriate alternative to providing asylum until the security, the rule of law, and human rights situation in Mali has significantly improved.
Mali has been in turmoil since a separatist uprising in 2012 overthrew the country's president. The UNHCR says nearly 140,000 Malian refugees have fled, mainly to Burkina Faso, Mauritania, and Niger since 2013. More than 52,000 are internally displaced. The United Nations says nearly 200 of its peacekeepers have been killed in the last 6 years, making Mali the deadliest peacekeeping operation in the world. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The deadline for candidates to file to run for president of Tunisia following the last months of Beji Said Essebsi has come, revealing a crowded field of about 70 candidates. 44-year-old Prime Minister Yusuf Shahed was among the last to jump into the race for the September 25th balloting. He is considered to be one of the frontrunners in the third election since the country's 2011 Arab Spring uprising. Also in the field are former President Monsef Marzouki, Defense Minister Abdelkarim Zebedi, ex-Premier Mahadeh Jema, businessman Nabil Karoui, the owner of private Nesma TV, and Abdel Fattah Mourou, vice president of the moderate Islamist Ennahda Party, Tunisia's largest political group. Openly gay lawyer Munir Batour also is running in what is believed to be a first for the Arab world. Despite the change to democracy, Tunisia has struggled with repeated jihadist attacks, 15% unemployment, and 6.5% inflation. A new Human Rights Watch report says Eritrea's use of secondary school to channel students into indefinite government national service and its conscription of teachers subject students and teachers to forced labor and physical abuse. VOA Salem Salomon has the report.
For many teens, the last year of high school is a time of excitement filled with studying athletics and dances. For young Eritreans, the year is spent in a military camp preparing for mandatory conscription into the army or indefinite national service. A new report by Human Rights Watch offers the most detailed look to date at Eritrea's system that forces young people to complete their final year of high school in the desert town of Sawa, which is part boot camp, part school. The report titled, "They Are Making Us Into Slaves, Not Educating Us," relies on interviews with 73 former secondary school students and national service teachers to provide details on what happens in this camp. Letitia Bader, a researcher at Human Rights Watch, said the system makes young people feel helpless.
There was this sense that, you know, not only were young people not given really any control over their destiny.
The report found that students in Sawa are under military command throughout the year and are subject to beatings for minor infractions and perform forced labor. Teachers at the camp are not much older than the students, and since they are forced to teach, are often indifferent or absent.
And whether that's being forced to go to Sawa, being forced, in, even if they were lucky enough to make it into further studies, into a channel they did not choose, to be forced into national service postings they did not choose indefinitely, etc. But it was also this sense that really, you know, it's the year at Sawa in particular, it was impossible really to be a student, to think like a student in such a militarized environment.
The system of forcing young people to complete 12th grade in Sawa dates back to 2003. Each year, between 11,000 and 15,000 students are brought to the camp, which Human Rights Watch describes as like a large prison surrounded by barbed wire and armed guards. Human Rights Watch discovered that young people are dropping out of school in 11th grade to avoid being sent to the camp. Students and teachers are also risking their lives in large numbers to flee the country. In the report, former Sawa students described training that began before daybreak and included harsh drills, survivalist training requiring them to sleep outdoors in extreme heat and being deprived of sufficient food and water. Sawa is hell. They do everything to make you want to leave, a 19-year-old told Human Rights Watch. Beginning August 1st, the Eritrean government held a three-day-long celebration in Sawa commemorating national service in the country, filled with parades, songs and speeches. The Minister of Information, Yamana Gebremeskel, said that the celebration is two generations, one before and after independence. In an interview he gave to state-owned media journalists dressed in military attire, President Isaias Afwerki emphasized that national service is a continuation of Eritrea's 30-year struggle for independence.
Maybe when you are comparing it to the struggle for independence, the sacrifice might be different, but to develop a country is more difficult.
Human Rights Watch found that teachers felt as trapped as students and take great risks to escape. Bader said the sense of desperation was apparent among interviewees.
We also spoke to people who had been teachers for decades and who had on multiple occasions tried to be discharged from their national service jobs. But it came across very clearly in the research that being discharged is very arbitrary. It's often left to the whim of government officials. And so once again, this was something that a number of teachers actually said to us, they just gave up hope.
Human Rights Watch said, due to the peace agreement with Ethiopia, there is no justification for the system to continue. The group urged the Eritrean government to set a timetable for demobilizing national service conscripts and allowing students to complete their education at non-military institutions. Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington, D.C.
In response to the report, the Eritrean Minister of Information, Yamana Gabramaskal, rejected HRW's recommendations, saying seemingly sanctimonious and unsolicited advice cannot indeed mask the ulterior motives of its purveyors. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Uganda has beefed up security on its side of Lake Albert. The move aims to counter possible retaliatory attacks by suspected Congolese militiamen following the arrests of their colleagues. The militiamen, identified as 22-year-old Enoch Shombe and 27-year-old Waroma Adoga, are in Uganda police custody. Continued attacks on Lake Albert have paralyzed business as Ugandan fishermen fear losing their lives, money, and property to errant Congolese militia. VOA's Catherine Nambi files this report from Kampala.
2 days ago, Ugandan fishermen arrested two suspected members of the Congolese militia on the waters of Lake Albert, which is shared by both Uganda and Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC. Vicente Alpha Opio is the local Council 5 councillor of Kaboya sub-county in Uganda's Hoima district. He says the fishermen disarmed the men and handed them to Ugandan security officials who placed them in police custody.
We have received two Congolese armed men being arrested by the Ugandan fishermen in the waters of Lake Albert. This is a part of the team that has been terrorizing fishermen of the water, looting their fishing gear, and later they asked for ransom to recover the fishing gears, including the boat nets and the engine, plus the rest. It has been for long, almost over 2 years, that the Congolese robbers have always been robbing the Ugandan fishermen.
To avert retaliation by the militia, Uganda has deployed security personnel at major landing sites along the lake's shoreline. Samuel Kisembo is the resident district commissioner of Uganda's Hoima district. He also chairs the district's security committee.
We are going to make sure that we secure our borders to deter any revenge and any attack on our fishermen because of the action they took. So we have already agreed with Marines, our UPDF arm. We have also agreed with UPDF to strengthen security on our borders, especially in Kaiso and Sevgoro area, up to Mutiaba area, to be in position to respond whenever we are called upon by our fishermen.
Chisembo, however, has asked the Ugandan fishermen to remain vigilant and report any suspicious people to the police. Meanwhile, Chisembo says the Ugandan officials are planning a meeting with their Congolese counterparts to discuss how best to overcome the attacks on the shared lake.
We are now going also to have another engagement, I think next week, with the governor of Ituri to see how best we can put to end these hostilities. So the engagements will continue.
The arrests come in the wake of continued attacks on Ugandan fishermen on the waters of Lake Albert by suspected Congolese militiamen. The number of assaults have been growing since February last year. Scores of the Ugandan fishermen have lost their lives during the attacks, while others have lost property, including fishing gear worth billions of shillings. The militias usually ask for a ransom of between $500 to $800 to release the fishermen and their property, and sometimes sell it back cheaply to the DRC fishermen. Most of the Ugandans have abandoned their fishing activities due to the continuing attacks. This is Catherine Nambi For VOA News in Kampala.
Zimbabwe's government has suspended publication of inflation statistics for the next 6 months. The move by Finance Minister Mithuli Nkubi has been met with controversy. Eddie Gondo has more on the story.
Finance and Economic Development Minister suspended the reporting of yearly inflation statistics by the country's national data collection body, Zimstat, in his mid-term fiscal policy review statement last week. According to analysts, Nkubi's decision to suspend annualized inflation figures comes in the wake of a steep rise of the inflation rate from nearly 98% at the start of the year to 175% in June. The yearly rate for June climbed by about 77 points to over 175%. This represents a gain on the May inflation rate of about 98%. The period has seen skyrocketing prices of basic commodities, which are part of the basket of goods used by economists to compute inflation. Critics charge that by reconfiguring inflation, Nkubi is trying to present a rosy picture of an economy in dire straits. Economic analyst Dumisi Banda explains.
I think it's just a mind game. Because when you look at the annual figures show a high figure. But when you look at the month-to-month figures, they are not necessarily high. So it's
according to Trading Economics website, in Zimbabwe, the four key components of the consumer price index are food and non-alcoholic beverages, housing and utilities, transport and miscellaneous goods and services. Others include household contents, equipment and maintenance, alcoholic beverages and tobacco, clothing and footwear and education. Also included, but to a lesser extent, are communication, recreation and culture, health and restaurants and hotels. Nkubi argues that prices of basic goods have not risen in US dollar terms.
Because in his mind, he is saying that when prices were in US dollars, say they were $3, you know, that thing that used to cost $3 is costing $30. So don't measure your inflation by looking at $3 and $30. Because $3 is based on US dollars, $30 is based on a local currency.
Nkubi is arguing against calculating annual inflation in an environment in which the monetary policy changed from using a multi-currency regime to the new RTGS dollar regime. The Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries economist Tafadzwa Mbandama warns against the danger of suspending the publication of the annual inflation rate.
We create a void in the economy. Somebody else is going to occupy that space. Already, we see Steve Hanke. He's already announcing inflation data for Zimbabwe. And then what happens is that even if it's not correct, economic agents are going to follow him.
Annual inflation reports from Zimstat show that the annual inflation rate opened the year at nearly 57%. It has since galloped to 175%. Economic researchers such as Steve Hank say that Zimbabwe has the second highest annual inflation rate after Venezuela with 538% as of July 11. Mthuli Nkubi has in his turn challenged the Zimbabwe Economic Society to come up with a better model of calculating inflation rather than the old mutual pricing of an equity instrument, which he says does not reflect the real situation on the ground. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suwuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Regis Audrius, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here. Only the best on VOA.